the volume.
The Colin Cowherd Podcast brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any fantasy sport, there is a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Wednesday Morning Podcast. My buddy Mike Silver has all sorts of NFL notes. I got a comment on the Lakers, who are apparently now run by LeBron James. So the average age of an NBA player is 26. The Lakers' average now is closer to 33. So they add Carmelo Anthony to Dwight Howard, to LeBron James, to Trevor Ariza, to Russell Westbrook. Carmelo's 38 in November. Dwight's 36 in December. Trevor Ariza just turned 36. They were the oldest team in the NBA last year. And I don't want to hear about Kendrick Nunn. The Warriors had him in their G League and let him go. Pat Riley let him go. Bob Myers and Pat Riley are two of the smartest guys in the NBA. They both had Kendrick Nunn. He's essentially a younger Dion Waiters. He's not a catch-and-shoot guy. He's highly erratic. Pat Riley and Spoelstra let Kendrick Nunn go. I don't want to hear about Malik Monk. You really think next June this is going to be the headline? Malik Monk leads the Lakers to the title. This team is old. And by the way, I love veteran players. But the Milwaukee Bucks last year were 27 and a half years old. Giannis is 26. Chris Middleton, 29. Bobby Portis, 26. Pat Connaughton, 28. You got to have some youth. Malik Monk is not going to get a lot of minutes in playoff games. Kendrick Nunn is Dion Waiters. He's one of those sort of give him the ball and let him go, and he can occasionally get really hot. You think LeBron's going to allow that in big playoff spots? This team is not as good defensively as they were a year ago, okay? And they don't really have guys who are going to get big minutes in playoff games and hit big shots. So, you know, I feel like with LeBron James, there's always been this sort of theory that LeBron will make it work. I think he could for the first 15 years of his career. I don't think that's as easy to do now. And by the way, I could argue the Lakers don't have a single elite player in their prime. The Bucks won, Giannis in his prime, Middleton in their prime. You cannot tell me Anthony Davis is in his prime. It's year 10. His injuries now are piling up. He's not out of his prime by much, but I'd make an argument he does not have another 10 years. I'd make an argument he'll be an eroding player within 2 years. Anthony Davis has had too many injuries, and they're now happening on a more consistent basis. This is an old basketball team, and Kendrick Nunn and Malik Monk aren't the answer to the finals. They're not going to get big minutes in a playoff series. There's no way LeBron would trust either in a big spot. It's an interesting team. It's a weird roster. It's an antique store. I'll watch, but with some skepticism. All right, bringing in my buddy Mike Silver. You've seen him for years, Sports Illustrated, Yahoo, Pass It Down podcast with his daughter Natalie. Been covering this stuff for a long time. All right, let's start. You were at Niners practice yesterday, and the stories in the last 48 hours on Trey Lance are he is tearing it up. You know, it's funny. So a couple years ago, people were hot and cold on Justin Herbert. And I remember telling a general manager, okay, that's the best Wisconsin defense in my adult life. He goes to the Rose Bowl. He runs for 3 touchdowns. He spins the ball all over the field. He was easily the best player at the Senior Bowl. And I'm like, when you can be sometimes watch the game and go, who's the best player? And when I watched Trey Lance, and I said this on the air, I don't have enough video, but the games that he played, his team was better. He was so much better athletically than everybody else. I don't need all the measurables. Like, there are guys sometimes you watch and go, whoa, whoa, whoa. Justin Herbert simply better than everybody on the field, and Oregon and Wisconsin have NFL players. So I'm not shocked that Trey Lance is, like, athletically, is popping. Are you surprised how quickly, for a guy that's played one football game in 2 years, he's adjusted?
Well, it's practice. So, you know, we could have said anything we wanted about Justin Herbert a year ago, but until he, with 3 seconds notice, jumped into that game and balled out against the Chiefs, right? And, you know, then we were like, wait. And then he did it again. And, you know, yeah, it was very clear. But, you know, you never know. And that's Justin Herbert, who, as you said, was playing against a great Wisconsin defense and future NFL players. Trey Lance, not his fault, but he was playing against, like, guys who are going to be, you know, working at, you know, the insurance agency or, you know, the mom and pop shop, telling their kids, yeah, I played with that guy who's in the NFL. You know, not a lot of future NFL players that he played against or with. And you combine that with the small amount of games he played. And again, not his fault. Last year, they only played the one for obvious COVID challenge reasons. And the year before was really his only year. And the small school part of it. So he's raw. He is a guy who doesn't just pop athletically, but his intelligence and composure and all those other things were eye-popping to them. They were like, whoa, this guy is really mature, really together, really smart, importantly, for that system. Odd year in that every quarterback I heard about up at the top was viewed as smart, by the way. Usually, many years, it's like, that guy's, he's okay. He's not a rocket scientist. But, you know, this year they thought, you know, the teams thought all these guys were smart.
By the way, Mike, I have a theory behind this, is you're getting more of that. And the reason is they're all coming into the league now with 100,000 snaps, quarterback camps, quarterback coaches.
Right.
I talked to Drew Bledsoe. He's like, I had 28 starts by the time I got, like, to college. Like, the bottom line is these kids can read a defense now, sophomore year of high school. They watch NFL film. They watch the 22 film. These guys are all smarter now.
It's possible, but the trend started this year, because in each previous year, I could tell you at least one or two people in the cycle who wasn't like, oh, these guys are dumb, but it wasn't the trait that popped to many talent evaluators. They could have been wrong, by the way. But, okay, so that's the exciting part about Trey Lance. He is raw. And so when they took him and didn't take Mac Jones or Justin Fields, they clearly were saying, look, we're comfortable not throwing him in right away, because most NFL teams would say in a perfect world, you'd wait a year with Trey Lance. Now, if he really is that good at practice, and we don't always know because we don't know what the read is and all that, but if he really is picking it up that quickly, then that doesn't matter. They went into this camp as a coaching staff with this belief. The best thing for us would be, and the worst thing for opposing defensive coordinators would be, Jimmy wins the job legitimately. He starts, he stays healthy and plays well, and we have a Trey Lance package every game that we can throw at people and they have to prepare for. And the athleticism alone is going to freak people out. So that's what the ideal scenario is for them. But if Trey Lance just clearly looks better, or if Jimmy is losing or not playing well or injured, all of which could happen, then you're going to see a change.
So if Trey really chops it up.
Yeah.
And Garoppolo plays well, Mike, in September. And they say to themselves, shit, Trey's ready to play. And this is not a quarterback-centric offense, right? Right. This is not Kansas City. And you look at it and you think, this team's desperate. This team's desperate. This team's desperate. And somebody makes them a first-round pick offer. My contention is, or a starter, I think it's possible Garoppolo gets moved if Trey chops it up.
Well, I think it's possible Garoppolo gets moved if Trey doesn't chop it up, because the offer could come right now. I mean, Chris Ballard could have called John Lynch, the day that Carson's foot, you know, the severity of it became known to him, and he could have said, I'll give you a one for Jimmy. And they might have done the cost benefit and said, we'll do that. So, you know, we saw that. Remember, you know, the Eagles were going to keep Sam Bradford and when Wentz was a rookie, but then Teddy Bridgewater got hurt and the Vikings were like, oh, we'll give you a one. And they were like, a one for Sam Bradford? Yes. And they obviously had liked what they'd seen of Wentz. So that could happen. I went into the 2019 season saying something that looked bad in retrospect, but I will stand by it. And I said going into 2019, they're at the point with Jimmy Garoppolo where if he either doesn't play well or isn't winning or is banged up, they will play Nick Mullins. That's how they felt after 2 years of losing in a year that they knew they had to win. Now, he didn't play well in the first game against Tampa, but they won. After that, he played better. They won, I think, their first eight games that year with an incredible team effort, and he stayed healthy. They obviously got to the Super Bowl. So in retrospect, it looks silly. Mike Silver was saying Nick Mullins might replace Jimmy Garoppolo, but Jimmy made it look silly, and he stayed healthy. And the rest of the team, obviously, they were a beast. So I would say it's the same thing, and it usually is when a quarterback is drafted that high. You know, Andy Dalton, Justin Fields, same thing. Yeah, Andy Dalton's the guy, but if he isn't playing great or the team isn't winning or he gets banged up slash injured, you're going to see Justin Fields. So with all of that said, how Trey Lance looks to them and how they perceive it will factor into that calculation about whether to trade Jimmy. But I do think it's more what you said. It's not we're trading Jimmy. Okay, anyone want him? It's when that call comes, and it could come now, or it could come when a team in September loses a guy, then you go, okay, cost benefit, we could play this kid now and we'll get this. Or you know what? It's too important. We need Jimmy here right now because we think we can win it now. And remember, Alex Smith Kaepernick was a similar dynamic there. Alex Smith played almost a perfect game, had, I think, a perfect. It was like 22 of 23, but suffered a concussion. They had to turn it around 4 days later and play on Thursday night. I went to that game against the Bears. Kaepernick, you know, just looked different and better and more athletic and took the job.
Pivot to the Colts. So I watched Jacob Eason play a lot in college because he played at the University of Washington. Mm-hmm. He went to Georgia. He's from the state of Washington. Got beat out by Jake Fromm, who they said just learn the system sooner, quicker, upstairs. He's more cognitively capable of learning the Georgia system fast. Jacob Eason goes back to the state of Washington, to the Huskies. Big, strong kid, big arm. Yeah. My knock on him with Chris Peterson was he was great on scripted plays, very good in the first half. When asked after half to be off script, situations where judgment, he's making a play on his own, he makes really bad throws, and his judgment is really, really at times iffy. NFL games much faster. I remember having a conversation with a scout. I was at a practice, and there was a scout there, and he knew I was from the Pacific Northwest. And I said his arm makes him a great backup. But I just saw him at Washington too many times with a great coach, Chris Peterson. And if you ask him, and this is the league now, off script, make a play, I don't trust him. So you spent some time with him before the 2020 combine. What did you hear? I just don't think he's a viable alternative. I don't. Now, he's had some real struggles early in camp. What is your takeaway on the Colts feeling on him and your feeling on him?
Well, great question. I did spend some time with him kind of right before the world shut down in 2020. I liked him. I could understand, you know, I understand what you're saying about, you know, physically. I saw him throw, you know, it's very eye-catching and like, whoa, this is a guy, right? So,
yes.
And he did, I thought he might go a little higher in the draft because of that. He didn't. Now, it really hurt him and Jordan Love and every single guy from that draft that there was no real offseason, right? There was no offseason, there was no preseason. So normally you'd say, well, they've had him for a year, they know a little bit. but they know less than they otherwise would. Just like the Packers know less about Jordan Love than they otherwise would. Of course, you know, the Justin Herberts of the world. Yeah, we know very glaringly, but you know, a quarterback who never sniffed the field as a rookie last year, Jordan Love, Jacob Eason, it's a tougher thing to evaluate even internally. Now, Chris Ballard did the math on this. They had Jacoby Brissett last year. He's had kind of a backup plan each year in theory. This year, his plan was we're going with Carson Wentz, who, yes, Frank Reich knows him and has a comfort zone, but has been hurt a ton. So it's not far-fetched to believe that Carson Wentz could be injured. So he felt comfortable saying, my backup plan is this kid. So we're going to see, right? And, you know, nothing precludes them from doing something between now and the start of the season, including, hey, Phillip, we love you, man. Or, hey, Andrew, how much do you weigh right now? Oh, 170? Never mind. But, I mean, they could do something. But if he doesn't, then that tells me, you know, if you would, from the outside, if you said, okay, well, Carson, that's on Frank Reich. That's his guy. That's why they brought him in. Well, Jacob Eason being the week one starter will be on Chris, right? That was the plan, that this guy was ready to be the backup with less information than usual. So that makes me inclined to think that he probably has a better chance than on the outside we're, you know, imagining.
One of the things I love about betting on FanDuel Sportsbook, and I do every day, is you get more than one shot to swing for the fences. Right now, new and existing users, new and existing, get up to $25 back in site credit each day. Just place a minimum 5-leg baseball parlay, and if it fails, one leg short, you get up to $25 back with parlay insurance. Okay, it's a chance to put a small bet down and win big. You give your betting picks for the day using current odds available on FanDuel Sportsbook. There's a reason FanDuel Sportsbook is America's number one sportsbook. The app is really easy to use. Great odds on all different betting markets, unique fun bet types like same game parlay. That's the best thing they have in my opinion, same game parlays. And always on promotions let you get more out of every game action. And if you win on FanDuel, they pay you in as little as 24 hours. In addition to the parlay insurance. If you haven't tried FanDuel Sportsbook yet, new users can place your first bet risk-free. That's right, new users, $1,000 back in site credit if your first bet doesn't win. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app, sign up with the promo code Colin to get in on the action. That's FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code Colin. 21 plus and present in Colorado, Indiana, or New Jersey. Must wager in designated offer market. $10 first deposit required, $150 max bonus. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gaming problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, and 1-800-GAMBLER in Jersey. So teams always want to make their draft picks look like their successes. GMs hate to bail on their picks.
And they extend sometimes to justify them. Yeah, you're right.
Yes. So I remember Daniel Jones' first camp with the Giants, and there was a lot of skepticism about him as a number six pick. And suddenly there were leaks from the Giants camp, slow-mo videos of Daniel Jones making wonderful throws. And it was like nobody had video and it was leaking out and I'm like, and it was slow-mo and the throws were great. And I remember at the time, I'd been at Fox a couple years and I was talking to a producer there and I'm like, this is so transparent and orchestrated because everybody is so down on him. They're just leaking this stuff. So some of the stuff I'm seeing from Tua and the Dolphins feels like, oh, any good throw, it gets social media within 30 seconds. But what do you know, my takeaway is, I've just seen this. I know the game. Like Tua, once a day, a great video will come out and be like, okay, why'd that video come out? That's an interesting video the Dolphins released.
They definitely want us to think that Tua's getting better. They want Tua to think he's getting better. They want the people in the huddle to think he's getting better. But you're right. we're not going to know. And so, listen, it's just human nature. And they can say, oh, that's just media noise. It's not. And I love Chris Greer. If Chris Greer and Brian Flores are sitting there last year and they're like, yeah, our guy, he's young, he's coming along. We had to pull him out of some games that were important to us and throw Ryan Fitzpatrick in because he's better now. But, you know, we really believe in this kid. Wait, what did Justin Herbert just do? Like, whoa, like it is just, it's human nature. Like you could have had that guy, but you took this guy. How do they compare from the jump? Not well for you. Now that doesn't mean Tua can't get better, or it doesn't mean you, you know, hate the fact that you picked him, but you're watching this, you know, revelatory guy look like he's just born to do it. And I want to underscore the fact that he, that first game where we all went and then he built on it, he had no prep. Anthony Lynn told me that, you know, the Chargers team doctors, who might have been like Dr. Bombay from Bewitched for you old people, they were like, hey, Tyrod, let's give you a little shot there. Oh, we just punctured your lung. We're so sorry. You better go to this ambulance right now and make sure you don't, you know, have something horrible happen to you. And as that was going on, like, it's like, and the home of the brave. Whoosh. I don't know if they do flyovers there, but like all that's going on. And finally, Anthony Lynn says to Justin Herbert, who's pretty young and still doesn't know, he goes, hey, you're starting. And Justin kind of gives him the laugh, like, haha. And Anthony goes, no, seriously, dude, you're the starting quarterback. And then it's like, there's the kickoff. And then he went in. I think they had the ball first. It was crazy.
And he was so good that, you know, that's the takeaway on the, like, I look at Tua and if they, and I do think adding Will Fuller to Gesicki, the tight end, Devontae Parker, I think Jalen Waddle, listen, I think some of this is, listen, man, even if he doesn't work, he can't bomb. We have got to make this because Herbert is so good. And Burrow, my GMs, the guys I trust,
yeah, they like Burrow.
Freaking love Burrow.
Yeah, and, like, and it's by a way, Washington, Ron Rivera told me if Chase Young had gone one or something, you know, something weird had happened, they were taking Burrow at two in a heartbeat. You know, they thought those two players were way above everyone else. Now, in retrospect, you put Herbert obviously
at the top. Right, but you know, it's funny, Mike. You can do everything right in this league. If you F up quarterback, it doesn't matter. Right. Chris Ballard and Greer, they've done everything right.
I know.
Everything.
I know.
And, I mean, I think maybe they overpaid for Byron Jones at corner.
Well, I would argue Chris Ballard, we've had this conversation. There's a few things I would quibble with. Chris Greer lately, I'll stay off Chris Ballard because he's down right now. Quentin Nelson just got hurt. Like, let's give him some clemency from me. But Chris Greer, just the way they're maneuvering that thing, you're right. Like, they're doing – and he and Flores are building something potentially really, really good.
Oh no, there's no question.
But so I think with Tua, you know, look, it's not like, oh, they just happened to bench him in big games for Ryan Fitzpatrick. No, they needed to because Tua couldn't do it. It didn't help, by the way, that Tua later said – I probably should have studied more, you know.
Listen, if you go back to the game, they beat a playoff team. The Rams, on a short week, traveled to the Eastern time zone.
And the defense.
The Dolphins on a bye.
Yeah.
Like, and Tua still couldn't throw for yards. Like, it's, we're getting to a point now, if he struggles in September, they made a mistake.
And they were in, theoretically, in the offseason on some of this. You know, Deshaun Watson. Yeah, we're listening. You know, we're in on that. The Dolphins were not. It wasn't like they were just like, "Hey, man, we just drafted Tua. Don't even." You know, no. They were already thinking about it. So he's under a lot of pressure to start well and play well.
So the Cowboys acknowledge Dak had a little bit of a setback, and it's funny when you pull a groin. You often pull the other side because you overcompensate. And my theory is Dak with a leg injury is overcompensating by becoming more of an arm thrower in practice. that it's just completely natural.
That seems like what I would do if I could throw. Yeah.
Right. So I don't necessarily, I don't think it's a big deal, but they don't have a backup plan either. And you got to let this puppy heal. And they're on Hard Knocks and he's not playing. And their schedule's pretty tough early. You know, they open with the Buccaneers. Is there anything that concerns you a little about the Dak news?
Yes, because it's a quarterback and it's an arm. I mean, anytime it's a quarterback and it's a throwing arm, I don't care if it's fatigued or, you know, there's a little twinge or, yeah, I mean, you know how it is. It's like a pitcher. It's your arm, dude. And so, you know, quarterbacks can get by when they're a little hobbled sometimes or, you know, apparently without an MCL if you're, you know, Tom Brady. But if your arm starts getting, you know, janky, then I'm concerned. And, you know, I covered Joe Montana. I consider the greatest ever when I was young in the business. And he was coming off two MVPs and, you know, almost three Super Bowls in a row. And all of a sudden in training camp, his elbow was just a little weird. And then next thing you do, he had surgery and missed the whole year.
Yep.
Well, the next year he came back and it was a quarterback competition between him and Steve Young. Think about that, by the way. We were covering that daily. But then I'll never forget, up in Rockland at Sierra College, he walked off early in the middle of an afternoon practice back to the locker room. And I knew him. I saw his face. And I'm like, something else happened. And it was the same elbow, maybe not the same exact injury, but same elbow, new surgery. And he played again in the second half of the last game of the regular season. It's a whole other story. But he basically missed all of 2 years and then was on the Chiefs.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't worry a ton about it. But, you know, I always had this theory that, like the Lakers, they added a bunch of pieces. But they've only really got one player, Anthony Davis, in his prime.
Right.
Generally, you have to have, like, two stars in their prime to win a title, preferably three to four players in their prime. Anthony Davis, year 10, has had so many injuries, I'd argue he just left his prime.
Yeah, maybe.
So it's funny about the Cowboys. Name the players in their prime. Zeke isn't.
You know, what they're hoping is that we don't know these guys that well, but they're going to show us this year. You're right. I mean, the line, I mean, that, you know, maybe Zach Martin still is, but like that line.
Oh, boy.
That
I
line was that line was special. That's what made them special. And that's far from its prime collectively. But yeah, it's a good question.
And that's my point. Dak is one of the few.
Yeah, he's got to be Dak.
That's in his prime, and now he's hurt.
Yeah.
So like Zeke's not. Amari's not. No. CeeDee Lamb probably is at the end of this year.
Yeah.
Nobody on the O-line probably is. DeMarcus Lawrence should be.
Yeah.
But is under. So my takeaway on this thing is in the NBA, you need about three good players either in their prime or damn close. In the NFL, you probably need about seven.
Yeah.
And I just don't see a lot of Cowboys in their prime. Okay. So I do this with everybody I bring on, TV, radio, podcast. So every year there's a team that we think is going to be good and they implode. Last year it's the Niners and it's almost always due to injuries.
Yeah.
So I'm never going to ask you to predict that. But then there's always a team that we think is like a 7-win team or a 6-win team and they get the 10. And we're like, whoa. So I'm going to sell you on Sam Darnold in Carolina. And here's my sales.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. So Chuba Hubbard is a very important draft pick. Because like McCaffrey, he's a home run hitter. Najee Harris goes in the first round, but he's not a home run hitter. He doesn't give you 20-plus chunks.
Right.
McCaffrey and Chuba, two of them, are both home run hitters. DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson. If Christensen, the rookie from BYU, wins the left tackle job, I'm told he will. Matt Rhule, second year. Joe Brady, second year. Now, they've got very good defensive line talent. They went last year, Derek Brown, they went big on safety, the secondary, and they went big on the D-line. So the D-line now is actually the best part of their defense. You start looking at their pieces, Anderson's a home run hitter. Darnold's got a ton of juice, a playmaker. McCaffrey, Chuba Hubbard, DJ Moore. This is a big play offense in a division. Saints in Atlanta. Atlanta's defense is in a rebuild. I would argue the Saints are in a rebuild. They have the sixth easiest schedule. I start looking at Carolina and I'm like, the second year when new bright offensive guys come in, there's a big leap. Also last year with Matt Rhule, no preseason. I think Carolina, I could be my Darnold affection. I think Carolina has a chance to be like a 9-10 win team. And by the way, it's 10-7. I'm not saying they're great. Are you saying
they would be an 11 win team? Yeah, like, are you saying as good as a 10-6 team?
I'm saying finish second, 10-7, wild card team, Matt Rhule, Darnold, second year.
You know what? I don't hate it. I don't know on Darnold, but I do think Matt Rhule, you know, is doing it the right way and has a chance. And it, obviously, it's not optimal conditions to come in. Now, Jim Harbaugh did it in a lockout year, you know, and, you know, darn near went to the Super Bowl that first year. It was crazy, and then went the next year. So it can be done. But yeah, we'll learn more about Matt Rhule this year. I think they're potentially building something. You know, that's going to be, it's going to be really hard to adjust to the whole blank win, you know, conversation. I'm just realizing when you said 10 win, immediately I start going, well, is 10-7 really that good? Like, I don't
well,
know.
It's probably, it is different. Basically 10-7 means you hit a couple of game-winning kicks. I mean, seriously, right. It really means you had a couple of big plays in a drive late in games. Because, I mean, last year, I think the Chargers were involved in 12 one-score games last year, which led the league. Carolina.
And the good Charger year, they won all those one-score games. It was the opposite, yeah.
So a lot of times, a 10-7 team is you made a play in a drive late. That's right. It. You picked right. up a first down. So, I mean, give me a team that I will go, wow, I never thought of that.
Well, I don't think you're – I don't think – if I said the Chargers, I don't think you're going to think that's okay.
That's right. That's right.
So I won't say them, but I do think they're going to be good. I would say, you know, that's – and you've heard me talk about – I would say, you know, I got one for you. I think – how do you feel about Washington? Because they were 7-9 last year. But, okay. But I think they're going to be pretty good.
Okay. So Curtis Samuel – is now their second elite receiver. And their defensive line it's the best young defensive line. It surpassed the Niners in the league. And it's really not necessarily close right now. I mean, it's four dudes that can play.
They're monsters, yeah. So
they're really good.
And Jamin Davis right behind them, you know, that gets me excited potentially.
But here's my knock on them. The division's winnable. But Jesus, who are we kidding on Ryan Fitzpatrick? When's the last time he had good back-to-back years? I mean, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, that's the, you know, what I'm hoping with Ryan Fitzpatrick is sometimes when these guys get really old, they have it so figured out and they're so calm that they're better than you think. You know, all the way back to Steve DeBerg when he was really old, but for you old people. But, you know, sometimes quarterbacks, you know, they don't usually last because they get hurt and stuff. So you're right. I'm hoping against all previous Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, logic, because it usually goes in a circle, right? Like, wow, he's really good. They should probably pay him. You know, then it's like, ah. But, you know, Ron Rivera has constructed it so that he's not asking the quarterback to win a lot of games. He's asking the quarterback to manage it. And you probably can't win the Super Bowl doing that, but you might be able to win 11 games, especially in that division.
Yeah. Finally, you tweeted yesterday out of nowhere that Maroon 5 Super Bowl halftime show sucked. And it was fairly random. And what was the revelation that came to pass that you rushed to your phone to tweet that?
Wow. I don't know that I can really, like, do that justice, right now, although I think over beers, you and I would probably be able to sort that out a little better. But I consider myself a connoisseur of the Super Bowl halftime show. And I remember the Up With People days. And, you know, I love the classic rock stuff. So I thought it was, you know, amazing with the Stones and the Who and all that. I always thought U2, and I've always said, I thought U2's halftime show was the best that I have ever seen. It was,
yeah, it was great.
It was after 9/11. It was, you know, captivating and haunting and loud. And I would stand by that. But though though it's outside my zone of music a little bit, I thought Lady Gaga stepped up to that.
Thank you. I thought she crushed.
She murdered, obliterated. And you know, what we saw when she acted in Star is Born, like, whoa, she's so great at acting too. Like, that was, like, she was on that level of a halftime.
Yes.
Show. So I would say U2 and Lady Gaga to me are the standard. And it's not everyone can do a stadium. So I don't even want to blame Maroon 5. Like, not, you think, wow, they're really popular. I know some of their songs. They'd be great in a stadium. No, they're not. I've been to a lot of stadium shows over the years. Trust me, some people can do it, and some people, it just doesn't translate that well. And I just thought that was a really poor choice.
And it is interesting. I've been around 1,000 celebrities.
Right.
Steven Tyler, Lady Gaga. You can feel the stardom.
I am wondering if you had, in fact, drowned that plane, but somehow survived. Like, that plane, when you opened the airport restroom door, the flood came out. And
yes.
It went up to everyone's neck, and there was, like, some swimming, but the pilot Sully Sullenberger did, and you guys lived. And you were, you know, you came clean on the story. I'm wondering how famous you would be, because you're very famous, and you've earned it, you know, with, you know, hard work. But that would take you to a different level of fame. Like, people, I feel like, in Indonesia would have an awareness about you all of a sudden. I'm wondering, like, your aura might have changed.
Yeah, for those listening to this, I almost downed an American Airlines plane by, in the bathroom, turning the water on and not being able to get the sink off as it started flooding the bathroom.
It was an ill-fated trip long before that, but this was this escalated things. You had to have the thought, though, in that moment. I know you had that thought, like, is this ever going to stop? And if it doesn't...
No, there was 10 seconds of absolute panic. I started kicking it. I couldn't shut it off. I got up on the bathroom and started kicking it.
Do we know?
I was panicked for 10 seconds.
Do we know what shut it off?
Oh, no, my foot. It eventually shut off.
The foot did shut it off.
Yeah, no, I there was 10 seconds, and I'm like, I'm going to flood the plane. We're at 33,000 feet. I'm going to flood the plane. And I didn't, and then I started splashing it, and it started getting on the floor, and it had been a long day, and I was already amped up. It was just, you know how it is, like, I could never be a CEO. I'm too emotional. I could never be a CEO of a company where, like, the stock crashes and you're supposed to walk into a board meeting and go, everything's good. It's all good. Literally, a bathroom sink in 10 seconds, I lost my shit.
Was it front or back?
Back. And it was the only bathroom on this small plane.
It was a little.
Okay. So there wasn't much cabin to fill up. We'd have gone down in like 4 minutes.
Were your kids, like, laughing really hard, or were they just mortified that, like, you all were going to get, you know, outed as these, you know?
No, I'm not sure I told them. It was one of those things where I'm not sure I did. I just knew. I think I may have told my daughter. It was. Listen, I haven't had many of these moments in life where you kind of freak out, but there was, and they're usually very brief. So this summer, I had 10 seconds where I lost my shit.
And that's 10 seconds at 33,000 feet is a long time. Like, that's not 10 seconds at sea level. You know, 10 seconds at 33,000 feet, or 10 seconds at, like, you know, 100 feet below, would, you know, in the ocean, that would be big. But like 10 seconds could be long.
Yeah. I mean, if you're flying a plane and you lose a second engine, that's a long 10 seconds.
Yeah. That doesn't feel like, you know, 1, 2, 3.
It's 1,002. All right, Mike Silver. Listen to The Volume Sports, Twitter and Instagram. Rate, review, subscribe. Good seeing you, buddy.
All right. Thank you so much.
The Volume.